tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest star Michelle McAloon, who we respect as a woman. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
You have made it this far. That's right. You've made it to Monday morning, 8 a.m. Central Time to be exact. And I think you deserve a medal, don't you? A miraculous medal. And we have assembled a miraculous show today for your entertainment and edification. We have Amish musicals, Saints in Court for Libel, and the Divine Mercy Chaplet prayed live on air. Now you tell me where else you are going to get such a mix. And such a mix-up, right? We have the award-winning writer Martha Bolton joining us to talk about The Confession, the musical, playing for one night only at a theater near you. She joins us in the next segment. You're going to want to stick around for that. Top of the hour, we have another prayer warrior joining us to pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet. You too can be part of this praying community. How? Well, by just listening. That's right. Just tune in and hear yourself being prayed for. However, if you have a specific need, we're welcome to text it in to us on 251-928-2111, and we will pray for you. Lines are open now. Get those phones working now. Story time today involves a saint and a predator priest. That's right. And how the latter took the former to court with unexpected consequences for all concerned. You're going to enjoy what's coming up in the final segment. So how does that all sound? Well, in that case, let's get this show on the road. So welcome to Monday morning. We're doing our best here to try and lift that weight. Monday morning is always that change of gears, right? Everybody has it, no matter what you do. I'm sure even the Pope, when he gets up on a Monday morning, thinks, really, is it already Monday? The weekend just seems like yesterday. It does. But here we are. Now, listen, I woke up this morning, turned on the radio, couldn't believe the news. Have you heard this? Roald Dahl's books are being rewritten. Have you heard? So books like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, James and the Giant Peach, The Twits, Matilda, The Witches. Guess what? They're being rewritten. Why, I hear you ask. Well, let me tell you. They're deemed to have offensive words in them, offensive language. No, not that sort of offensive language, but words like fat and ugly. Right? I am not making this up. Okay, so let's go back. The publisher of Roald Dahl's books is Puffin Publishers. They publish lots of children's books. As a kid, I had Puffin books. Everybody had Puffin books. Well, the people at Puffin have decided that Roald Dahl has to be reinvented for a new generation of children. So they're going to have to rewrite all his books and remove language deemed offensive, including descriptions of characters' physical appearances. Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe this. I mean, listen, what is the point of having fairy tales, children's stories, if you don't have the Wicked Witch? If you don't have the wicked stepmother, if you don't have the fat whatever, the ugly sister, whatever. What is the point, right? I mean, are we really going to have Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf sitting down for a cup of tea? And that's the end of the story? Come on. I mean, Mike, you've voiced children's books and also children's series. And in particular, you've done that wonderful series, Tompkin, which I hope will never be rewritten. What do you mean?
I don't think I'll have to worry about that one.
As a consumer of children's books and a purveyor of their sense on air, what do you make of all this?
I think it's as absurd as you think, Kevin. I mean, It's just I'm not surprised that I think this woke culture has infiltrated children's books. It's a sad state of affairs when that creeps into it, because you have to have, you know, the absurd, the antagonist who's every bit as, you know, whatever, it's ugly or fat or whatever. It's just been part of we didn't have a problem with it, you know, many years ago. So now we're just now having this issue. Now we're just now, you know, all of a sudden offended by it. You know, I don't, you know, I'm trying to think of the children's books that I have read. The most recent one being The Emerald Kingdom, The Dragon and the Unicorn. I'm trying to think. I don't think it had anything that the woke culture would consider needing a rewrite. It was a beautiful tale. I'm trying to think of another one, Stu and the Robots. I mean, they were mean, angry robots. Were they ugly? I'm sure a few of them were, so maybe that part should have gotten taken out. Maybe we need to be more kind to robots.
We need, you know, the people doing this. Let me just tell you, there is somebody out there whose job is to be a sensitivity writer. Okay.
Okay.
So they read children's books and they get offended by the slightest little thing, and then they rewrite them. That is their job. That's how they get their paycheck. But help me out here. I was just thinking we could help these people out a little bit. So I'm going to run through the titles of the various books they're going to rewrite, and I thought. The crew here at Archangel, we could come up with something to help them. So let's start with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. What could we call that? Charlie and the Nondescript Color Factory. How about that? the Charlie and the Low Fat Chocolate Factory. How about that?
Yeah. There we go.
Something like that. James and the Giant Peach. Well, we can't have peachism here, so it's maybe James and the Average Sized Fruit.
Average Sized Fruit. Yeah, there we go.
Average Sized Fruit. What about the Twits, Mike?
What about the which?
The Twits.
Twits.
The Twits.
Hmm.
What about the Differently Logical?
Yeah, I like that. The Differently Logical, Those with an opposing view.
Those with an opposing mentality. Absolutely.
There you
Matilda.
Go.
Well, Matilda can't be Matilda, right? That's a bit too straightforward. Well, it's just a girl. So we'll have to have Matt and Matilda.
Yeah. What was some of there was? Didn't he write? There was the other one about the fox, right? What am I thinking?
I don't think they're rewriting that. But I think, what about Matt, Matilda, and the other?
Yeah, because you gotta have.
We've covered all our bases. We've covered all our bases, right?
You gotta have both sexes, Matt and Matilda.
Now, what about the witches? Now, that's gonna be problematic.
Ooh, those who wish to do harm.
Or what about those with just different beliefs?
Ooh, yeah. Maybe we give them some, like the LGBTQ, we give them some different letters? I don't know.
Yeah, the sort of new age pagan
the WXYZ.
Some of these names would make great names for blockbusters that y'all are coming up with.
Yeah.
Well, they'd be blocking something. I'm not sure it'd be blockbusters.
How do we get the job? How do we get a job? That's the question. How do you get a job as a sensitive writer?
Well, I've applied for it, but I haven't replied to my application yet.
I have applied. Give it a few more weeks and then resend your email. I'm sure they're going through stats.
I'm being very sensitive to the request. And you know what? I'm not even going to go near the Big Fat Giant. I'm not going near that title.
Oh, okay? No.
That's just beyond me. That freaks me out as a proto-sensitivity writer.
Kevin, you said in your application that you were enormously excited to work there, so that probably...
Really?
That's where I went wrong.
Yeah, we'll scratch his name off.
I'm glad you're on the show today, and I'm glad you've come in, because I've got something to ask you as well, because do you like meat?
Me, Kevin?
Love it.
I like meat, yeah.
Well, you probably know. Now, are you, I hope you're sitting down because I don't want you to collapse and Mike have to resuscitate you.
I'm ready.
Did you know that you know, meat and chicken and all the rest of it, when you go to your local McDonald's, right, that's what you expect, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You expect meat.
It better be.
Well, McDonald's are going foul-free with their McNuggets. Can you believe it?
I can believe it. Okay, in Europe, I can definitely believe it.
In Europe, they're starting to trail it, but what happens today in Europe is going to happen tomorrow in the States. And it's going to be called McPlant Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about you, but McDonald's McNuggets sort of, they're, you know, it rolls off the tongue, right?
McPlant Nuggets. Maybe the
McDonald's McPlant Nuggets. I mean, it sounds like a medical condition that you wouldn't want.
Maybe the job should be, this will be a new job. You have to come up with the name for the new food items.
It's like marketing and sensitivity put together.
Exactly. I'm surprised.
That's a sensitivity eater.
Yeah.
This is great. Everybody
great job. Yeah,
here.
Reed,
this
you're right.
Sensitivity eater. So sensitivity, you will never taste.
Ooh, yeah.
You will never taste the steak again, the meat inside a McDonald's. But Reed, I was wondering, did you hear about the McDonald's trying to get into the high end steakhouse market?
I did not hear about that.
It was a Big Mick steak. And you know inflation, we talked about that on Friday. Do you remember the balloons? That's why we have so many balloons. But things are getting so bad. McDonald's is selling a quarter ouncer.
Yeah. I don't like that one.
I know. Okay. So now, the other one you will know. What type of computer does Ronald McDonald use?
I am not sure at all.
Big Mac. Listen, I have some advice for Burger King, right? Because, you know, the advertising campaign for McDonald's is all about that clown. What's his name? Ronald?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but he kind of freaks me out a bit. He's kind of a bit creepy clown. Is it just me?
When I was a kid, he was all over McDonald's merchandise, and I didn't really ever get that feeling from him.
So, I mean, why isn't Burger King using on their advertising, why eat with a creepy clown when you can dine with a king? I mean, why aren't they using that?
Because creepy, you know, again, it goes back to the whole sensitivity. We can't call clowns creepy anymore. Come on.
A clown with alternate views on how we should behave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just rules off.
How we should behave and how we should eat.
It's up there with McPlant Nuggets. I mean, I can't even say it. It's written in front of me. McPlant Nuggets. I mean, if it tastes like it sounds, I don't want anything to do with it, all right?
Well,
but listen, we better ask the audience here what they think, because we're getting a little bit filled out here on our McDonald's. But I'll just say one thing. I did hear that McDonald's is launching a new burger to commemorate Shakespeare's birthday, which you probably know is St. George's Day, April 14th, I think. And you know what they're going to call it?
What would that be?
Macbeth. Listen, you don't get this news anywhere else, and if you want to be part of this show, part of this spectacle, then do give us a ring, 888-928-0881. We would love to know what you think of these plans to take the McDonald's burger out of your mouth and replace it with some vegan-friendly McPlant Nuggets. Or some such thing. Or if you want to tell us about Roald Dahl, what you think of all the books being rewritten so that they become so anodyne that you won't want to pick them up because there's no baddies, there's no goodies, there's just a kind of amorphous lump in the middle of people who are just having a nice time together. I mean, who wants that? Haven't they heard of drama? Haven't they heard of the three-act play? Haven't they heard of the need for opposites within a dramatic structure so that you get tension? You must have good and you must have bad. And what does it reflect? It reflects the nature of the universe we live in, which has good and bad. And no sensitivity writers at Puffin or anywhere else can write out the fact that we are in a fallen world. And if you don't think it's fallen, look at that key to your house in your hand. Why do you have keys in your house? Because it's a fallen world, right? Or why do you have a key for your car? Why aren't all car doors just lying wide open? Because we live in a fallen world. Tell me what you think. 888-928-0881. We'd love to hear what you think. Hey, that means we've got a call, Reed. Who have we got, Reed, and where are they calling from?
We sure do. I haven't spoken to them yet, Kevin, but we'll go ahead and play it risky, and we'll put them on with you.
Okay. We don't screen calls on this channel. We just put you straight through. So who have we got, and where are you from?
Hey, you guys are very trusting. You just let on anybody. Hey, Dave, man, how you guys doing?
Dave, good morning to you. Welcome on board the good ship Archangel, Dave. This is Dave, in case you don't know, our regular listener out in San Francisco. Dave, it's always good to hear your voice, especially on a Monday morning. You seem to make it a habit. What's on your mind this morning? Hey, what do you think of these plant nuggets? Are you going to be buying them?
Well, you know, no, as long as, you know, no, it's just gross, man. It's just, I'll never look at nuggets the same way, just like I'll never look at eggs the same way again, man. You know, especially now with Nancy Pelosi getting her wiry fingers on them, you know, and throwing them, you know, somebody needs to, like, you know, one of those UFOs, I wish they'd come and try to get me again. I'd be like, no, you know, you need to go over to, you know, Nancy Pelosi's place and get her and take her aboard your spaceship, you know. You're wasting your time on me, man. Maybe they'll take her, you know, and go get some of these farm nuggets or whatever you call them.
I wonder why they haven't taken her, Dave.
I don't know, probably scared, man. She looks like one of, you know, you guys are talking about mean, ugly, you know, creatures. I mean, you know, a children's book, she looks like she'd be like the wicked, one of those wicked witches of, you know, that they talk about in Roald Dahl's book, man. You know, like, she'd be a great character, you know. And probably, you know, Roald Dahl, if you met her, man, he'd be like, oh, man, you probably got me a hit on my hands, you know. Like, she could be like the one, you know, that the kids stay away from. She throws, you know, eggs at you anytime she gets close, you know, you get close to her and whatnot, man.
Dave, I love your logic here. I mean, it really is different. I'll tell you what, why don't we throw together Nancy, UFOs, and McPlant Nuggets? Could we make a could we make a show with all three of those elements, do you think?
Not only show, we have a hit, you know, a children's book on our hands. Matter of fact, I'm going to do you one even better, Kevin. Pelosi and UFOs and Farm McNuggets on ice. How about that, huh?
I love it, on ice. Well, what about the musical? We've got a musical writer coming up. We could have something like Take Me to Your Leader, Nancy, so we can sit down and have a McPlant Nugget, the musical. How does that sound?
Oh, I like to. I'd probably like audition for it as the lead role. You know, like, you know, Dave Colaquat as Nancy Pelosi, starring as Nancy Pelosi. Hey, kids, don't come around here no more, or you'll get an egg in your face. You know what I mean?
I do. The only thing is, you know what really worries me, Dave? Because we're going to have Nancy and we're going to have Ronald McDonald on screen together. And I think that means it's going to be an R rating, so the children won't be able to come to watch it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, PG-13 at the very least, man.
Oh, I think it's an R rating. Do you know what I mean? I mean, can you imagine Nancy Ronald having a bit of a get together, a bit of a tiff over the McPlant and McNugget thing? I mean, it's just going to be Texas Chainsaw Massacre all over with the ketchup, right?
Oh, yeah, man. People just running out of the theaters. I don't even know, why would you even buy a ticket? So, you know, probably just, you know, Congress could fund it or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you might say you've already had enough of that in the House of Representatives with Ronald McDonald there.
Yeah, maybe Hunter Biden will, you know, sell a laptop or something and fund it.
Yeah. Well, he might have a spare one running around. Anyway, Dave, I hear there's bad weather coming in from the west, so I hope you're well wrapped up out there in San Fran.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I wish I could get down. You guys are having a parade, right, in Deer Hoop?
That's right, tomorrow, big day.
The big Mardi Gras parade. So yeah, I'm gonna brace. You know, I'm gonna put some boards or something up on the window in case you know gets too bad. But yeah, man. So you know, pray for me, man. Pray for San Francisco. We seem to be having a lot of this. I wonder if it's all probably Nancy Biden's doing, man. She's, you know, I'm gonna blame it on her. If you can blame it on somebody, blame it on her, man.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Dave, we're going to have to go for a break. Whatever happens weather-wise, you stay tuned to Archangel Radio and to the Turley Frequency, and we'll keep you updated on the real
hour,
essential
man.
Stories of them.
It's the finest hour. It's the finest hour on Catholic Radio, man.
It's 2 hours, Dave, but never mind. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. Live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Welcome to this Monday morning. I hope it's going well for you. Now, Fathom Events is a content provider that broadcasts entertainment events in movie theaters throughout the United States. You may have seen its relays, for example, of the Metropolitan Opera live in HD, but it also does other performing arts events and major sporting events and music concerts. And coming to the big screen as a Fathom movie event today, February 20th, is The Confession, the musical. Now, this is coming out of the writings of Beverly Lewis. Beverly is the author of more than 100 books. She's a New York Times best-selling author and has been captivating her readers for more than two decades with tales of love and devotion set against the backdrop of Amish culture. Yes, that's right, Amish culture. Now, her best-selling book series, The Heritage of Lancaster County, has been developed into a theatrical musical that is coming to the big screens, as I say, tonight. The Confession is a story firmly rooted in Amish culture that explores what happens when a family risks being shunned because their daughter has decided to explore the possibility of living in a world defined by the modern set of principles, ideals, and lifestyle. Now, the screenwriter for this is Martha Bolton, and this woman needs an introduction all her own. In fact, you may have to sit down for this. Martha was nominated for a Writers Guild Award for her work on the Emmy Award-winning Bob Hope, The First 90 Years. In fact, she was Bob Hope's first female staff writer and wrote for his television specials. Over 30 hours of primetime programming and 15 years of his personal appearances and special events. As a staff writer for Bob Hope, Bolton had the opportunity to write scripted lines for a virtual who's who in entertainment, sports, and politics. Now, if that wasn't enough, Martha also wrote for Phyllis Diller and many, many other comedians. In fact, she's received nominations for an Emmy, a Dove, and as I say, a Writers Guild Award. She is also the author of 88 books, that's right, 88, including her newest, Dear Bob, Bob Hope's wartime correspondent with the GIs of World War II, which was awarded the Christian Market Book of the Year, and so on and so on. Look, Martha is also a prolific playwright with shows playing in Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, and two of the musicals are based on her novels, Josiah for President and The Home Game. I mean, does this woman ever sleep, I ask myself. Well, let's find out as she joins me down the line. Martha, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Well, it's great to be on, and no, I don't sleep, so...
My goodness, Martha, you are a busy woman.
I love my work. I love what I do, and just you in the beginning you think you're going to run out of ideas, and I think the more you do, the more ideas come. So I'm just having the time of my life.
Yes, indeed, sounds it. Now listen, we better talk about the confession, because tonight is the night, right? Across the United States,
yes.
You go out, buy your tickets. So tell me, how did you get involved in this project?
Well, Mel Riesecker, who he's our executive producer, but he also owns the Blue Gate Theater and hotel and restaurant, and he wanted to do some musicals with an Amish theme. And so he contacted Dan Postema, who's our producer, and discussed it with him. And then Dan brought me on board as the playwright, and then Wally Nason is our songwriter, and we just started. And our first one was The Confession by Beverly Lewis. It took a trilogy and then adapted it to the stage, the three books. And then it's been playing all along ever since, but we've also written 13 others, and we've been busy and just having a great time telling stories that either it's about an Amish person that's in the English world or an English person that is in the Amish world. So They have a lot of the same issues that we all deal with in life. And it's just interesting to bring that, that world to it and to see it through the Amish eyes of these situations and then bring a powerful message as well.
I mean, Martha, I'm assuming, I don't know why, I'm just assuming you're not an Amish member of the Amish community.
No, but I've always been fascinated with them, even before I got involved with this. So when Dan asked me if I would be interested in writing it, I just jumped at the chance, because I just the way they, their simplicity, their, just the stability in their faith, and just there's so many positives to it, and it just seemed like an interesting thing to explore, and mm-hmm. it has proven to be that. We've dealt with some very interesting topics through the Amish culture, so it's been fun. But it's the English world as well, so it's not like it's only Amish. It goes back and forth, especially this one, because her search for the truth takes her in to the of her own identity, takes her into the English world because she discovers a secret about herself. So, yeah.
Well, now, Martha, I can toss this to you without any fear of a problem, which is people are sitting thinking, this sounds interesting, right? This thing's called The Confession, the musical. Now, you know all about elevator pitches. You know all about strap lines. You worked in the movie and the film and TV long enough. So if somebody was just saying, hey, Martha, what exactly is this? What would be your sort of how would you sell this to your audience?
Well, a young girl discovers a family secret that takes her into the English world on a journey to find the truth, but it also reveals secrets and truth of everybody's life, and it applies to the audience and to the characters on the stage as well, on the screen, that it turns out that everybody's got something that that they need forgiveness for, and also to face the truth about. So we've reached our floor. I think I'm done with the the elevator.
Basically, it's a wonderful concoction of coming of age, mystery, redemption, all wrapped up with some great tunes.
Absolutely, and it's dramatic and it's comedy, and they'll just have a great time tonight.
Now, there's something you keep saying, and I saw it in some of the information I got, which is the English world. Is that how the Amish see the non-Amish, as kind of the English world?
Exactly. That's what they're called, Englishers. And it just means you're not non-Amish. So it's everybody else besides the Amish. So when they go into the English world, then that's what that, yeah, that's what that means as far as that goes. Mm-hmm.
Do you expect any, I forgive my ignorance, but is there a cinema near, a movie theater near the Amish that they can go and actually watch this? Or is it something that they'd rather not watch?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they've come to the plays that we've had, and they've come to the confession, and they're huge fans of Beverly Lewis's work. And we have a theater. In fact, each of the theaters that we're in are set in Amish country in the theaters that are there. And not only tourists come, but Amish and Mennonite and different ones, and you'll see them in the audience. And they love the message of it. Oh yeah, we love it when they're there, and they give us they help us out, you know, if we have questions, and then encourage us, and they're very supportive.
Did you have to go and spend time with the Amish, Martha, when you were researching this?
Well, yes, we get up there quite often, and also. Mel Riesecker, our executive producer, grew up Amish, and so he's our go-to person for anything that we have a question about. And what's interesting, too, is different areas that we go, each community has their own sets of rules. So, you know, what is okay in one area is not okay in another. So we have to stay on top of all of that and adjust.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I was thinking before we came on air, the only representation of the Amish I can think of on the big screen was, I think it was called Witness. Do you remember the Harrison Ford movie?
Right, yeah.
And I'm not sure it was particularly sort of, I don't know what the Amish would have thought of that. I wouldn't have been particularly happy with it. But, I mean, are they a bit sort of cautious about media people, media movies, using them basically as window dressing on a very worldly plot?
Well, until you get to know them, until they get to know you and they know your work, there would be a little bit of guardedness. But we've been, they know us, they know Mel, he's right in the community. He lives in the community and most of his family, are still Amish. So we're very involved in the Amish community that way, and we're very respectful of them, and we want to make sure that we treat them in a very respectful way.
Now, you are a writer, you've written across many genres, and I absolutely take my hat off to you for that, Martha, but on this you've had to work with the writings of somebody else, Beverly's writings, Beverly Lewis's writings. Was that difficult, sort of working with somebody else's sort of imagination that's already kind of set?
Well, I had three books to work with, and you have to go in and see what is going to work visually on the stage and the different scenes and the different characters. And of course, you can't put everything on the stage because it would be days long. But you're selective, and then I added certain places where. I added comic relief or different scenes that you pull out, or you take this person's characteristic and then you play around with it a little bit and take some creative license. Like the Dylan character, I kind of made him part of the comic relief, but it happens all around him. He's kind of unaware of the comic relief that he's causing, but the audience enjoys it, and that's the one that's played by that's the role that's played by John Schneider, and he does a terrific job. And then Shonda's character, again, she brought to her role, it's a comic relief role, so you find those places, and it's just a different kind of work when you're working with somebody else's storyline and work. It's fun, like Josiah for President and The Home Game. Those were my own, so I could take more liberty, I guess, to put it up on stage and whatnot. But you still want to be true to the book and the story. So it was the same with Beverly's. I wanted to be true to it, and then be selective on which scenes you put up on stage.
You're listening to the voice of Martha Bolton, who is the screenwriter on The Confession, which is set to make the Fathom movie event, debuting tonight, Monday, February 20th, as a one-night-only event. And if you're listening thinking, I've got to get tickets, I've got to go and see this, go to fathomevents.com/events/ The Confession Musical, and you can buy any amount of tickets there, I'm sure, for a theatre near you. Martha, I'd love to talk to you a bit more about your career, about writing, about all your adventures in the media world. Can you stick around for another segment?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Love to.
That's great. Okay, that's Martha Bolton. And if you have any questions for Martha, feel free to call in 888-928-0881. Or if you prefer me to ask the questions, I'd be delighted. 251-928-2111. We'll be back straight after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. Frequency live and exclusive here on Archangel Radio, and I'm in the middle of a fascinating discussion with Martha Bolton, who is the screenwriter on The Confession, the musical, which is set to make its Fathom movie event debut tonight, Monday, February 20th, as a one-night-only event. And for more information on where it is being shown, how to purchase tickets, then go to www.fathomevents.com/events/ The Confession Musical. Martha, will you be going tonight? Will you be having a front row seat, or have you seen enough of this?
No, I'll be there. In fact, I'm going to be at both shows, 3 o'clock and 7.
And I'm assuming you're in downtown Hollywood with such an illustrious career.
Well, I that's where I grew up and lived there all the time I was working with Bob Hope, and now I live in Nashville.
Oh, Nashville. So you've gone from the world of movies to the world of music. Now, talking of movies, I have a couple of questions for you, Martha, that have just come in from listeners. First one, what is a screenwriter? Over to you, Martha.
Well, it's the person that puts the words that you'll hear when you watch it on the screen. That would be the screenwriter. And it all starts with the paper, and you've got to get the words on the paper and the scenes and all of that. So it's just something that is necessary, just like the author of a book is the person that puts the words in the book and the story, which Beverly Lewis, was the person who did the trilogy from which the Confession movie is taken.
It's true, but I think, Martha, you're probably, I think the screenwriters, don't you agree? And you would agree, I'm sure. The screenwriters are often the unsung heroes of Hollywood, right?
Well, yeah, you could. There is some of that. Yeah. But, it's just so fascinating, though, I love seeing my words. I loved it when the comedians, you hear them say your lines on like the Tonight Show or something when they're a guest on there. It just gives you, that's my reward, is to hear it on television or hear it on this in a movie, and to hear the audience be moved or laugh or whatever the emotion is. It's probably on the on the latter, they do get overlooked a lot, which, shouldn't be the case, but yeah.
Now, you were one of Bob Hope's gag writers and sort of writers for his material for many years, right?
15, yeah.
That's incredible. You know, I heard a documentary about Bob Hope on the BBC radio the other day, and they were interviewing two of his writers. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, Martha, they painted a fascinating picture of Bob Hope. Now, I'm a big fan of Bob Hope. I grew up watching Bob Hope. I thought he was a genius, right? A total genius in terms of timing, in terms of persona, in terms of understanding an audience. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the footage of him in Vietnam talking to men who were out there fighting a war, and he has them laughing as if they were on a cookout on a beach in Malibu. I mean, you know, it just totally transforms and takes an audience wherever. But these two writers for him said that he was a very good man to work with, but very exacting. And depending on where he was in the world, you might get a call at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. And he'd be saying, talk me through the jokes for tomorrow. And you'd have, and he would go, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes. Now, without wishing to break any professional confidence, Martha, was he as much fun as they describe?
Well, you know, the reason why he did that a lot is because he would be in different time zones. So he would wake up with an idea or a question or whatever, and he'd call us, forgetting, or, you know, it didn't come into his mind of what time it was at our end, or he was getting ready to walk on stage somewhere, which we got those calls a lot, and he only had the 5 minutes to get a hold of you before he, you know, before he walks on stage. So it was very, very busy writing. You had to be on your game at moment's notice. You had to be able to, okay, this is the topic. This is what's going on in the town where I'm at. Give me something on that, and you'd have to fire it right back. So in that regard, it was. But he was very good at also calling you up and saying, man, you know, those jokes played great. Give me some more on this topic or that topic. He was very complimentary either there or at NBC when we were taping the shows. He would look over at the writers and compliment, you know, if a joke particularly played well, or he never blamed you if a joke didn't land. It was always he picked wrong. there were other good ones on the page. You know, he had that attitude that it was his choice of what he picked, and he was just I can't say enough good about him, because he was just he was an incredibly nice man to work for. In 15 years, he never said an unkind word to me. He was just that way, very easy to write for. But then the volume of the busyness of his schedule, the volume of material that he went through was an awful lot of work. And you just had to know that came with the territory.
But Martha, you're talking as if you were writing jokes for me. I mean, you're writing jokes for one of the greats, right? One of the all-time greats of cinema, comedy and cinema. I mean, Bob Hope's up there with the Pantheon, right? I mean, for a start, I mean, how do you land a gig like that?
Well, it came out of a disappointment. I had gotten in touch with Gene Parrott, who used to be a writer for the Carol Burnett Show and Mama's Family. And I had read his book, and we had a lot in common because he wrote for Phyllis Diller. I wrote for Phyllis Diller. I also got my start writing comedy, writing roasts for different people. My pastor, I would roast him. I would roast people's, you know, other churches, their staff and so he did too with his business, that's where he got his start. So I just wrote him a letter and told him that we had it in common, how much I enjoyed his book. Well, he invited me down then to see Mama's Family, a taping of it. And I went down, and we went out afterwards, my husband and myself and him, and I showed him some of my work. And he challenged me. He said that you should be writing scripts for Hollywood, and why don't you write a spec script for Mama's Family? So I went home, and at the time my typewriter wasn't working. So at that, you know, that point in time, and I didn't want to waste any, I wanted to get it back to him as quickly as possible. So for a quarter, for 20 minutes, I went down to the local library and just kept feeding it quarters and writing, writing this script. I ended up writing two and got it to him, and he got it to the producer. The producer loved my work and said that he wanted to invite me in the next season to pitch some show ideas. So I was really excited. And what happens in Hollywood? The show didn't get picked up. At that point in time, it did later, but at that point in time, it didn't get picked up. So I was so excited and then came crashing down. But then Gene said, would you like to try writing for Bob Hope? And I couldn't believe it. I about dropped the phone. And so I did some jokes for Bob. He got them to Bob. And one night, about 11:30 at night, I got a call. And it was Bob Hope. And he told me he loved my work and just called me ever since. I ended up going on staff with him as his first woman staff writer. So that's how it all started. And
I'm sure they're going to make a film about you at some point, Martha, because this is an amazing, amazing story. But, you know, I mean, I've talked about comedians on this show, and, you know, you know this, that a lot of very famous comedians have a rather morose offstage, personality, which on stage they're full of life and fun and all the rest of it. I'm thinking people like Keaton and even Williams in recent years, poor man, you know, that there's a sort of something about comedians which is a little bit, shall we say, it's not the average, right? It's not like working for the CEO of a shoe factory or something. So, but it's sounding to me like Bob Hope maybe was such a genius. And so, I mean, he'd been in the business maybe so long that he was literally just part of the machinery and just knew that that the jokes came out from this part of the funnel and that Martha and the others were just pumping them out. And I mean, was that it? Did it feel like being on a factory line almost?
Well, it was. He had such a love for material and jokes. He could not wait to get the new batch of jokes on this new topic. He couldn't wait. He was like a little kid. He loved it. And when he would come home from a overseas tour, and the plane hardly had hit the ground from one of his, you know, they were taping one of the shows overseas, and the plane would hit the ground and he'd be on the phone saying, okay, what are we going to do next? He couldn't wait to jump into the next show and the next show and whatever it was he was doing. He brought such energy and such true love and passion for his career. You know, like he said, he said once, you know, I was always in the right place at the right time. Of course, I steered myself there. And it really sums up what he did, because he knew who he was. There was one show which was funny. We were taping a scene down at the old Grauman's Chinese Theater, where the footprints are in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to rain, and it was supposed to be an outdoor shot. And so we're like, okay, now what do we do? You know, because the footprints are outside. They can't get up and walk inside. So he just says, okay, everybody, follow me. And we start walking down the block, the whole crew, cameras, everything, down the block. He goes to a movie theater that's down the block, and he walks in, and he says, okay, we're going to film here. He just takes over the lobby. That's just, you know, we started filming there. We did it, you know, so it just, that was him. That was, you know, he knew who he was, but he adapted and just couldn't wait to, he just loved show business. He loved show business and the military. Oh my goodness. He would do anything for them and he just was very committed. Once he committed to something, which he had a big heart. Oh, my goodness. He had such a big heart. And once it got into his heart, he was committed. And after shows, we would tape. And he was in his 80s and 90s. And we would tape the shows. And he would he'd invite the audience if they wanted to stay or they could go, but he would go one after another taping public announcements for, you know, fundraising for this cause and that cause and that cause. And he'd be there like an hour
Wow.
at his age and just doing it one after another, all to help wherever he could.
But I was watching only a few months ago the various Vietnam shows he did that are all on YouTube mm-hmm. at the moment. And the thing that struck me, I mean, I've been a great fan of his humor since a boy. You know, we all thought he was very, very funny. But it really struck me in front of a live audience just how much presence that man had on stage. I mean,
and the thing of it is I think that all came, especially in World War II, and this is something that just followed him throughout his whole career, and his commitment also, you know, went that long as well. But the letters that went between him and the GIs of World War II, back and forth, and I got to work with them, and then we ended up, Linda, his daughter, and I did a book called Dear Bob Hope's Wartime Correspondence with the GIs of World War II. And when you read those letters back and forth, you understand all of that love that and just respect that goes back and mm-hmm. forth between them. And you see why, because he was relentless in being there for the guys. He would go wherever even if the pilot said, well, the storm's coming in and we can't go. And he goes, well, we could do it. You know, he just, it's all through there, story after story.
Martha, I could speak to you all morning about your career, about writing, about Bob Hope, about this musical. But unfortunately, the producers have told me to wind things up. So listen, could you just tell people where they can find out more about you and also about this musical?
Well, the musical, Confession Musical, movie.com, and it has lots of information there. And I also have a website, MarthaBolton.com, and they could find out about me there. Or
there's only one Martha Bolton. Just Google her. I did. You'll be amazed. Your website's very, very interesting. And if you want to buy tickets for tonight, fathomevents.com/events/the Confession Musical. You can find out where it's playing at your local theater and how to purchase tickets. Martha, it's been an honor and a privilege speaking to you this morning. I hope you'll come back.
I will. Thank you. Loved it. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. When we come back, we will be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. So get your texts in now for any prayer requests on 251-928-2111. Back after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.